Greetings, everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is an educational service in the public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 75 countries worldwide over the Internet. For more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. The Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, news, and current events, so stay tuned for tonight's special report on What If when we come back. You know, here's an interesting statement. It says, "Then Peter and the other apostles answered and said, we ought to obey God rather than men." You read that in Acts 5, verse 29. That's a revolutionary concept when you think about it. And it's impossible to put into practice unless you personally know the law yourself. Can you imagine yourself actually telling a policeman or a judge that the law of God supersedes the law of the state of Michigan or California? Well, there are actually three authorities that support Peter's position in Acts 5, verse 29. That is, the First Amendment to our Constitution is number one. Public Law 97-280 is the second. And the Supreme Court's decision, in Seeger versus U.S. is third. Now, do you know the scriptural law to cite in support of your position on, say, the census? Or public school, social security, vaccinations, or the many other laws of the scripture that conflict with the laws of your state? And do you know how to look it up, research it out, code plead the law, and then use the scripture to defend yourself against state and federal intrusion into your constitutionally protected rights? Because if you don't know the law of the scripture and you don't know the law of the state, you're not in a very good position then to challenge either one, are you? Now, if you're tired of being a biblical illiterate with the police and public officials kicking sand in your face, why don't you call and order my free General Law CD package? Now, that's a four-hour commentary. It's a commentary on the law in general. It's educational, it's informative, it's entertaining. Best of all, it's free, and you can call and order yours right now. The number to call, 417-273-4967. Now, our Mosaic Law School is also available on compact disc for adult home study. And if you're online, you can go to our website. Remember, that's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Or you can use that to click on to our email machine and send us an email request for that free General Law CD package. Again, that's georgegordon.org, or you can call direct 417-273-4967. We've been talking about a series of subjects that we all are involved in at one time or another, and we always look at these things in hindsight and say, gee, what if we hadn't done that? What if we had handled that in a different way? It's kind of like your first wife. You know, gee, what if I hadn't married my first wife? Well, then there wouldn't have been a divorce. But then, of course, those children that were born during that first marriage, they wouldn't have been born, they wouldn't exist. But then, perhaps there would be other different children from this second marriage, and maybe more of them. Maybe you would be in a different occupation or profession if you hadn't married that first woman. Everything that we do in life has certain ramifications, certain events trigger other events, and these events, when they occur, they change our lives forever. When you bought that ticket on the Titanic, life was never the same again. When World War II broke out and you joined the army, nothing was ever the same from that point on. Should you have joined the army? What if you hadn't joined the army? What if you'd have joined the Navy? What if you had stayed in the civilian sector? Well, once we've made the decision and we've lived our lives and we look back on them, we can't help but say, gee, what if? Take a look here at education. For years, the standards for behavior, for right and wrong, were derived largely from our religious teaching. When those teachings were finally disallowed back in 1962 and taken out of our school systems, they were replaced with value-free teachings. We started to allow students to discover and to set their own standards. And today, the results are now in. The lack of discipline and school violence are now the more troublesome problems that face American school teachers and academians. 14 of the 15 Gallup polls on schools during the 1968 to 1983 period cited a lack of discipline as the primary problem. Before the ban on religious teachings in public schools, the top public school offenses were listed as following. Maybe you can remember this. The number one problem in public school back in the 1930s, 40s, and 50s was talking. Second was chewing gum. Third, making noise. Fourth, running in the halls. Fifth, getting out of turn in line. Sixth, wearing improper clothing. Or seventh, not putting paper into waste paper baskets. Can you believe that? The top seven problems in public school in the 30s, 40s, and 50s. Talking, chewing gum, making noise, running in the halls, getting out of turn in line, wearing improper clothing, not putting paper in the waste baskets. Now that's when we had prayer in public schools. That's when we had morality being taught in public schools. That's when we used the Bible in public school, if you can believe it. I know it's hard to believe. The Bible in public school. All right, now here's where we've gone. The polls now list the top public school offenses as follows, and there's 17 of them. Not seven, 17. Top public school problems today. Number one is rape. Number two, robbery. Three, assault. Four, burglary. Five, arson. 6, bombings. 7, murder. 8, suicide. 9, absenteeism. Vandalism. Extortion. Drug abuse. Alcohol abuse. Gang warfare. Premarital pregnancy. Abortion. And venereal disease. Boy, that's a far cry from talking, chewing gum, making noise, and running in the halls, don't you think? Now, of course, somebody's going to come along and say, yeah, but you can't prove that back in the 30s, 40s, and 50s, the use of the Bible in public school prevented rape, robbery, assault, burglary, arson, bombings, murder, and suicide. Well, from this old country boy over here, maybe I can't prove it. But can you prove that taking the Bible out of the public school, taking morality out of the public school, has lessened or has increased morality and behavior and solved the behavioral problems in the public schools, or have they gotten worse? I mean, you can sit there and say, yeah, but you guys were talking and chewing gum and making noise. My God, that's a far cry, you know, from rape, robbery, and assault, isn't it? And I'd rather have some kid talking in class than raping some girl. Of course, I'm not sure that they're out raping girls. They might be out raping boys. You know, you can rest assured that your daughters are safe in the Catholic Church, but watch out for your boys. They might not be so safe there. Now, when we get down to the basic subjects and knowledge skills, An environment where violence, disrespect, and immorality prevails is not very conducive to learning. There have been such declines in students' basic knowledge and academic skills. Facts that on March 17, 1986, U.S. Senator Bill Bradley moved to designate a Geography Awareness Week. Geography Awareness Week. In a survey taken in January of that year, which had examined 5,000 high school seniors from 8 major cities on their knowledge of basic geography and had precipitated his move. Here's the results. Now, this is back in 1986, 20 years ago, 25% of the students tested in Dallas, Texas, could not identify the country that borders the United States on the south. You got that, boys and girls? Let me repeat that for us old guys over here, if you want a good laugh. 25% of the students tested in Dallas, Texas, couldn't identify the country that borders the United States on the south. Hell, half the people in your state come from that country. It isn't like you know they were from Iran or Iraq. Can you believe this? That this kind of crap goes on in America? What if we actually taught our students? I mean, you know, how long does it take to teach high school students in Dallas, Texas, that Mexico is the country on the south? You know, I just told you, can't you tell those students that in Dallas, Texas? Does it take longer than 30 seconds of a 180-day academic career? 180 days a year is what they send these children to school. What are these kids doing in school? Well, they're here's what they're doing in public schools today. They are practicing rape, robbery, assault, burglary, arson, bombings, murder, and suicide. That's the top eight. That's what they learn in public school. I mean, if you want your children to learn these 17 indicia of public school, starting with rape, robbery, and assault, public school is the best place you can send them. Now, if you had something else in mind in academics, well, then maybe public school isn't for you. Here's the second item. 39% of the students in Boston, Massachusetts, could not name the six New England states. Can you believe this? You're living up in Boston, up in New England. There are six of these New England states. And 39%, four out of ten kids couldn't name the six states that surround Massachusetts. Now, you'd think that most anybody living in Missouri would be able to name the states that surround Missouri. You know, at least four or five of them. You know, you'd be able to, you know, you'd think that by the time you get into high school, you ought to know that Mexico is the country to the south and Canada the one to the north. But they can't. They go to public schools, and my question is, well, what if we actually taught children in our public schools to name all of the states of the United States, not just the six New England states? When I went to school, I had to know all of the states and all of their capitals. Now, we had to pass a test that was called basic geography. And you didn't, you know, if you couldn't name all 50 of them, I think they'd pass you if you had a 70%. What's 70% of 50? Get my trusty, sharp calculator, 50 times 0.70. How much is it? 35. You should be able to name 35 states and their capitals in order to pass. And if you couldn't do that, then you couldn't graduate from high school. That was back in 1957, where I went to school. If you couldn't name the countries and capitals and the major rivers of South America, you couldn't graduate from public school when I went to school. If you couldn't name the countries and the capitals of Africa, the countries and the capitals of Asia, the countries and the capitals of Europe, you couldn't graduate from high school. It gets even worse as we go on. Here's a third one. 45% of those tested in Baltimore, Maryland, could not respond correctly to this instruction. The instruction says, on the attached map, shade in the area where the United States is located. Shade in the area. So they showed these students in Baltimore, Maryland, a map of the world. The same map that you see on the Lehr NewsHour projected on the television screen every night. They show you the map of the world and then ask this question. Can you shade in the area? Can you take your crayon, boys and girls, and can you shade in the United States of America? 45%. Baltimore, Maryland, couldn't do it. Couldn't find their own country on a world map. Haven't got a clue. Now, how long does it take to teach a child to look at a map of the world without any names on it, assuming that they could read anyway, but without any names on it, just say, well, could you identify Afghanistan? Because when I was a student, they would give you a map of the Middle East, and they would have all of the countries of the Middle East and their boundaries. And they'd say, okay, we want you to place the country's name and the capital of that country in each one of those blank squares. And so there'd be an outline there, and the outline would show us Israel, Lebanon, Syria, Turkey, Iraq, Iran, Afghanistan, Saudi Arabia, the United Arab Emirates, Yemen, and they'd leave Africa out. So that was another test, but you had to be able to look at the map, and then you would shade in, or you would write in, Iraq, Baghdad, Iran, Tehran, Arabia, or Saudi Arabia, Riyadh, and so on. And then, if you couldn't spell Riyadh correctly in the process, you'd get docked a couple of points also. Well, you got the capital of Afghanistan correctly, but you spelled it incorrectly. That's what happened to me. I didn't spell it correctly, and so I got docked. I can remember that going clear back to the 1950s. Now, why is it that we can't teach that? Or why is it that we don't teach that? Or are we listening to the students and the children saying, well, we're not interested in that, and we really don't want to know? Oh, I see. What the students today want to know is, how do you rape the neighborhood girl? How do you commit a robbery, assault, burglary, arson, bombings, murder, suicide? How do we cut school, practice vandalism, extortion, drug abuse? How do we drink, practice gang warfare, knock up the neighbor girl so she can get an abortion and avoid venereal disease? I mean, that's what we're learning in public schools today. And I'm sitting here saying, well, gee, what if we went back to doing whatever it was that we were doing in 1930, 1940, and 1950? Because when I went to school, the biggest problems that we had in school was talking, chewing gum, making noise, and running in the halls. I never heard of a gang. We didn't know what the hell a gang was. And I don't think that there was a boy in my high school graduating class that didn't have a gun, own a gun, know how to use a gun, and wasn't very proficient with it. Today, if you had a kid that had a gun, you'd say he's a terrorist. Why don't we teach guns and gun safety? I mean, we're teaching automobiles and driving classes and sex education in public school. I mean, you can teach the neighbor girl how to avoid getting knocked up by using the patch, but you can't teach her that Tehran is the capital of Iran? Gets better. Similar geographic weaknesses were discovered in a survey of college students conducted by the University of North Carolina in 1984. And by the way, do you think that schools are better today than they were in 1984? Oh, no. Scholastic achievement has declined every year. Every year. It's so bad that in Japan, they sent a team over here in Japan, are from Japan, and they looked around and they looked at our schools over here for 2 years. They went all over America looking for new and innovative ways that they could use to teach in their schools. And it's an important commentary, or it's a very potent commentary on the current state of American education, when after 2 years of extensive study, the Japanese researchers could find no specific aspect of American education considered worth emulating. They couldn't find one single aspect of American education that they would want to use in Japan. Nothing. Zero. Zilch. God, I couldn't blame them. America's children are in fact as dumb as a box of rocks. And somebody comes along and says, oh my God, we've got this Rhodes Scholar over here. Sure. Yeah, there are some exceptions. Notice the numbers over here. The numbers are 25% of students tested in Dallas couldn't identify the country that borders on the United States to the south. The good news is 75% of them could. That's about like saying that 75% of the boys could find their penises to urinate with and 25% of them couldn't, so they wet their pants. I mean, come on, kids. There are some things that are so basic that everybody ought to know that, don't you think? My God, what if everybody in the country knew that Mexico was our neighbor to the south? Maybe we wouldn't have so much misunderstanding with the Mexicans and 20 million of them here in the country. Maybe we would have a better grasp of South American international affairs. You know, maybe we would have a better grasp and understanding of how those people in Venezuela view us up here in the north. Maybe it would make a difference. What if? Now listen, here's your college students. College students were asked to identify the two largest states in the United States. Fewer than half of them could name Texas and Alaska. My God, don't you think that by the time you get to college, that you ought to know that Alaska has about 500,000 square miles and Texas has about half that, about 250,000. It's actually about 236, as I recall, 1,000 square miles. You know, when I was a kid, you had to be able to rank every state in the Union. You had to have an idea. You know, such as Rhode Island is about 1,000 square miles, and Delaware is 2,000 square miles. Massachusetts is about 7,000 square miles, and is about the size of Israel. There had to be some kind of a cause and effect. There had to be some kind of a proportion there. That Iraq is about the size of California. California is our third largest state. It's 158,000 square miles. So Iraq is about 150,000 square miles. Don't you think that there should be some sense of proportion? Well, don't you think that Condoleezza Rice kind of knows that? I mean, she's the Secretary of State. What if everybody in America knew that? Wouldn't then everybody in America have a pretty good grasp then of foreign affairs? Wouldn't they have a better grasp of foreign affairs? I'll tell you this. I don't think the average American could find Iraq on a map with both hands at high noon and a guide to go with it. But don't you think that maybe it would be a good idea if they did know? And, of course, if you're a parent and you're 35 years old and you don't know, you're naturally going to say, well, who gives a rat's rectum one way or the other? Well, that's the point I'm making. That's the point I'm making. Just because you were dumbed down and you're ignorant, why should your children be ignorant? I thought that the objective was, or at least it always was when I was a kid, I remember Frank Rocha never went to school, and he told me that. He said, you know, I'm illiterate. I can't read and write. And he advised me, and he said, now you stay in school, and you learn everything that you can. I didn't, but you should. Today, I find parents today, because they themselves are ignorant, and they will be the first ones to justify the ignorance of their children, rather than say, there's something wrong with our public schools over here. They're not teaching my Johnny how to read. By the way, we turn out about 3 million functional illiterates in the United States every year. These are people with high school diplomas. These are people who have degrees after their names. I'm George Gordon, high school graduate, and I can't read. That isn't anything to brag about, and we used to be very concerned about how much our children were learning and how much they knew, and we were really proud when our children knew more than we did, when they advanced further than we did. Now we make excuses for them. Almost 80% couldn't name the two smallest states. That's Delaware and Delaware and Rhode Island. Much less say, well, let's see, Rhode Island has 1,026 square miles in it. Hell, I live in a county here with 800 square miles. Our county's almost as big as Rhode Island. I was talking to an old buddy of mine out there in the West. He owns a place called the Pine Creek Ranch. It's out in central Nevada. It's 1,100 sections. His ranch is bigger than the state of Rhode Island. And Rhode Island has two senators and a representative. Hell, if we were talking about an area, Wayne Hage ought to have two senators and a representative to represent him in the Congress, for crying out loud. Well, Senator Bradley concluded, "This news is frightening." This is back in 1986. Now, he says, "This news is frightening. We depend on a well-informed populace to maintain the democratic ideals which have made our country great. When 95% of some of our brightest college students cannot locate Vietnam on a world map." Did you get that? 95% of some of our brightest college students? Bright? Bright. You're telling me that some clown that can't find Vietnam on a map is bright? You call that bright? That's Bradley now. He says, our brightest college students can't locate Vietnam on a world map. We must sound the alarm. I don't know why you need to sound the alarm. This barn's already burned to the ground. It isn't even smoldering anymore. And the fire is out, and the smoke has dissipated. We can't expect to be a world leader if our populace doesn't even know who the rest of the world is. Basic historical knowledge appears to be in the same substandard level as basic geographical knowledge. In a 1988 Department of Education book entitled American Education, Making It Work, concluded, many students are unaware of prominent people and seminal ideas and events that have shaped our past and created our present. That statement resulted from a 1986 assessment of 17-year-old students, 80% of whom were enrolled in U.S. history classes at the time of the testing. Now, what were some of these problem areas? Well, almost half could not place World War I between 1900 and 1950. Come on. You got to be pulling my leg. See, us old farts, you know, we'd sit here and say, you got to be pulling my leg. Now, World War I, you know, was a pretty important event in world's history. And it isn't something that occurred back in the Middle Ages or back B.C. It's something that occurred within the lifetimes of many of you right now. Some old people, you know, like my daddy was born in 1917 during World War I. Now, that's a fairly recent event, and it shaped international geopolitics to this day and will continue to shape those politics for years to come. Don't you think you ought to know something about that seminal event? Well, I guess most people don't, because almost half couldn't place World War I between 1900 and 1950. Hey, boys and girls, these are students 17 years old. Boys and girls, If that would have occurred in 1957, which was my last year of high school, I couldn't have graduated. I wouldn't get that little piece of paper that said that I was smart. Now, more than two-thirds did not know when the Civil War took place. More than 75% were unable to say within 20 years when Abraham Lincoln was president. Well, boys and girls, if they couldn't tell us when Abraham Lincoln was president, do they even know that Abraham Lincoln was president during the Civil War? One-fifth of the students, that's 20%, could not identify George Washington as the commander of the colonial forces during the Revolution. Well, what were those students learning when they were in school? How to unfold like a rose? Learning how to knock up the neighbor girl? Now, one-third didn't know that Lincoln was the author of the Emancipation Proclamation. I bet you if you ask them, well, what is the Emancipation Proclamation? I mean, if you don't know that it was Lincoln that was the author of the Emancipation Proclamation, would you even know what the hell Emancipation Proclamation means? What is it? Is it something that you put on your spaghetti? One half. Now, these are high school seniors, 17-year-old high school students. One half failed to recognize Patrick Henry as the man who said, give me liberty or give me death. One third did not know that the Declaration of Independence signaled the American colonists' break from England, and half couldn't even approximate when the Constitution was written. They didn't have a clue. When was our Constitution written? I don't know. Can you believe that? This American academic weakness became even more glaring when American students are compared with their peers in other nations. In 1983, the Dallas Times-Herald asked four educational experts to develop a test covering math, science, and geography, which was given to 12-year-old students in eight countries. The results of that international testing are shown on the following page. The United States did very poorly. And then they've got a chart over here, and the United States scored dead last. In math, we're dead last. In science, we're 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6th out of 8. In geography, we're 1, 2, 3, 4 out of 8. In math, we're 8 out of 8. I mean, come on, kids. And we want to brag up America. I wouldn't want to tell anybody that that's where I came from. Somebody might actually think I didn't know anything. I'm a little smarter than that, but I guess I came from an era before the public schools went totally down the sewer. And public school wasn't good in 1957. I want to tell you that it was the pits, and my grandmother told me that for what I had learned in school by the time I reached the 12th grade, she said I couldn't have got out of the 8th grade when she went to school. Yeah, that's my granny. My granny looked at me and she said back in the 1950s, she said, you know, little Georgie, you're about as dumb as a box of rocks. Because in the 8th grade, I knew more than you do in the 12th grade. I didn't doubt her. I can tell you now, boys and girls, that I knew more in the 6th grade than you high school students do today in the 12th. And I couldn't have got into the 7th grade with the performance that you 12th graders display today. Couldn't have got into the 7th grade. They'd have to hold me back for remedial classes. Well, what if we actually taught our students today what we were teaching them in the 1950s? They still wouldn't be as smart. They still wouldn't be as academically adept as they were in 1900. But it would be a hell of a lot further ahead than we are in 2006. Hey, let me give you your reminder here. You're listening to the Law Hour and Editorial Review, sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, worldwide over the Internet. Now, for more information about the law school and the Law Hour, please go to our website. Remember, that's georgegordon.org. The law school teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. The law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school, and it is open to individuals by prearrangement. The law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc. For more information, please go to our homeschooling page on the website at georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. And the Law Hour website is updated weekly. It has our radio log schedule and archives, and all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date. The Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest, and the Law Hour brings you timely reports on law, science, education, politics, religion, economics, history, health, news, and current events 7 days a week. The Law School offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. To order yours, please call the Law School at 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, the sources of information that we use on this program are true, accurate, and correct to the best of our knowledge and belief, and the Law Hour and Editorial Review gives credit to those authors and publications that we use on this program, and we often endorse and recommend books, periodicals, papers, and newsletters to our listeners. However, these endorsements or recommendations that we give do not mean that those authors or publications that we endorse or recommend are going to reciprocate. And that's because most of these authors and publications that we cite on the Law Hour are political, religious, economic, sectarian, racial, or ethnic partisans whose viewpoint is not necessarily 100% endorsed by the Law Hour and Editorial Review. And keep in mind that the opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine and mine alone. They do not necessarily represent the beliefs and opinions of the advertisers, sponsors, management, or staff of this network or local radio station. For more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please go to our website. It's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org, or you can call direct 417-273-4967. By the way, these numbers and the statistics that I'm giving you are cited from a book called America to Pray or Not to Pray, written by David Barton. It's a statistical look at what happened when religious principles were separated from public affairs. Again, the title, America to Pray or Not to Pray, David Barton is the author. David Barton, if you'd like to get a copy, they got a phone down there. The number is 817-441-6044. And it's published by Wall Builder Press. I doubt if you could get this anywhere. Well, you might get it in a Christian bookstore. I don't know. I haven't tried there, but I go right straight to the author. He puts out a catalog. He's written a number of books, periodicals, put out tapes. I think he's just plain dynamite. I just love to watch him and listen to him. I don't think he cares too much for me. I haven't heard anything good come out of his mouth concerning George Gordon, but I think that David Barton's a great guy, and I think that he's very knowledgeable, especially about history. And his big thing in life is education and government schools, how to improve them, what to do about them. Wall Builder Press is at Post Office Box 397, Aledo, Texas, 76008. So he's right down there among all you Texans. Aledo, A-L-E-D-O. I haven't got a clue where Aledo, Texas is, but that's because I went to public school, and I'm a recovering public school kid. Aledo, Texas, 76008. A telephone number, again, 817-441-6044. This little book is probably $12, I think, was the last time I bought one and paid that. He updates these every once in a while. Dynamite guy. Dynamite guy. You'll love him. He had some other things over here to say about our teachers, and our academics. And not much of it was very good. He said, for decades, the United States has participated in academic competition against other nations, but never before with these results. International comparisons of student achievement revealed that on 19 academic tests, American students were never first, never second, and in comparison with other industrialized nations, were last 7 times. How's that? Last 7 times, never scored first, never scored second. And the Japanese said that after 2 years of searching from coast to coast and border to border. They could not find one single aspect of American education that would be worth emulating in Japan. Not one thing. And they spent 2 years looking. Can you believe that? In a test comparing average American public school sixth graders with their counterparts in seven other Western industrialized countries, American public school students ranked dead last in mathematics and not much better in science and geography. Our 14-year-old science students placed 14th, tied with Singapore and Thailand out of 17 competing countries. Advanced American science students fare even more poorly. 9th out of 13 countries in physics, 11th out of 13 countries in chemistry, and dead last out of 13 countries in biology. Hey, boys and girls, there was a time when Americans weren't this dumb. I mean, I can testify to that. There was a time when Americans were at the top of the heap. It's not anymore, but I just thought I'd share that with you. Now, people like to defend the public schools. The public schools represent the 10th plank to the Communist Manifesto. It calls for free education for all children in public schools, abolition of children's factory labor in its present form, and the combination of education with industrial production. And I can't help but think, gee, what if we hadn't adopted public schools in America? What if we would have maintained our homeschool base system, complemented by our private school system? That's what made America great, not public schools, not emulating communism. We didn't become great, the greatest and most powerful industrial, military, and political nation in the world by emulating the 10th plank to the Communist Manifesto like the Russians and the Chinese. We became the world's number one. We became the world's dominant power by practicing the law of God, for crying out loud, boys and girls. We practiced home education in this country until about 1900. Somebody came along and said, you know what you Americans need is a good public school system like they have in Germany. A good public school system like they have in Japan or China or Russia or Brazil or Kenya or some other boondog place. And so we adopted it. Now here are the results. Practicing communists aren't as bright as we used to be. And now that we practice communism, we're not as bright as we used to be. In 1982 testing of 12th grade students among 11 nations, the United States placed last in algebra and was ahead of only Hungary in calculus. When considering only the brightest students, the top 5% of each category, the United States was last in both algebra and calculus. Got that? Last. But we beat out the Hungarians. Hungary, one of the poorest countries in Europe, where the people run around barefoot. We beat them out, boys and girls. You know, that's almost like playing a girls' team on the baseball field and say, well, you know, we beat you. Yeah, by one run. In a 1988 international assessment of math and science among six developed countries, American students ranked last in mathematics, next to last overall in science. The poor performance of American students on international math competitions, particularly after scoring so highly in previous decades, prompted further investigation into the math abilities of American students. The December 1983 Dallas Times-Herald Special Edition reported some of the findings. Here's what they were. A University of Michigan study of math achievement among fifth graders found that the highest achieving American class did worse. Here's ours. The highest achieving American class was poorer than, did worse than, the lowest performing Japanese class. Hey, you gotta be kidding me. Can you believe that? Listen to this again. Here's the University of Michigan. They go out here and they find the highest scoring class in the United States of America. Highest, smartest, best. Then they compared them to the Japanese, and they scored lower than the poorest class in Japan. Oh, my God. And it gets worse. A University of Illinois Chicago study found that the average American high school student would rank 99th in math when compared with 100 average Japanese students. Oh, got that? The average American high school student would rank 99th. There's only one Jap that you could beat out in Japan. My God, no wonder. No wonder Japanese have the Japanese have a trade surplus with the United States, and we're working for them building their cars in Ohio. Boys and girls, the Japanese are smarter than we are. And so are the Chinese, and so are the Indians. And that's why American business is moving to India and China. Not only are they smarter, but they also work harder. And so, of course, you know, that's where the money's at. And that's why they're relocating. Don't you think we could do a little better than that? Or put another way, what happened to us? What happened? It wasn't always like this. You know, we Americans in 1950 were the number one industrial and economic power in the world. Of the 15 leading indicators of economic power or achievement, 15 leading economic indicators, I call them, America was number one in shipbuilding, number one in steel production, number one in aluminum production, number one in coal production, number one in auto production, number one in railroads. We were number one in every one of the 15 leading industrial economic indicators. Number one in 15 out of 15. Today, America is not number one in a single one of the industrial indicators. Nothing. And that's since 1950. What happened? Well, David Barton, I think, put his finger right on the pulse of it. He said, when we, in an organized fashion, decided to give God the finger and throw his ass out of our public schools, it's been on the downhill slope for us, the slippery slope from that point on. Started in 1962. He cites chart after chart after chart and says, well, just take a look. Here's where Americans were, and here's what we were doing prior to 1962. Take a look at 1962, the bellwether year, and then take a look at our performance every year thereafter, and it's down, down, down for us. Well, I don't think replacing the Bible and the Ten Commandments with communism and the ten planks to the Communist Manifesto has done anything to improve America. I think that was our undoing. So I can't help but ask the question, well, what if we went back to and started practicing whatever it was that we were doing prior to our falling off of our perch and sliding down the slippery slope? You know, in business, we have a pretty simple, straightforward way of looking at the obvious. When you make an automobile like the Edsel and you put it out to the public and it doesn't sell, you stop making those and you make Mustangs. That's what happened to the Ford Motor Company back in the late 50s. Henry Ford, remember, he had a boy by the name of Edsel. Kind of an odd name. And they named a car after Edsel. Kind of an odd car. The Edsel. And it wasn't one of their better selling models, and people didn't want to buy it, and they invested a lot of money in producing it, and it didn't sell, and so they quit making it. They had another car that was called the Mustang. They had one called the Thunderbird. Remember that Thunderbird? God, that was a popular car. When I was a kid, everybody wanted a Thunderbird. And then the Mustang took its place, and everybody wanted a Mustang. And they sold millions of them. I mean, they just made a lot of money off of Mustangs. So they continued making Mustangs and selling them and making profit, and they quit making the Edsel, which they were losing money on. Now, you know, my common sense would say, I don't know what it is that made our students, made our people so much better prior to 1950, but there was something going on. David Barton said it was morality. It was the Ten Commandments. It was obeying God and keeping His commandments. That's what gave the edge to Americans and to America. Yeah, I got to tell you about this guy again. His name is David Barton, and I think you're going to like him. Now, remember I've said, you know, just because I recommend somebody or recommend his books doesn't mean that he's going to recommend me. And that's because here on the Law Hour, we're kind of way, way out, you know, into right field. We're kind of right-wingers over here. And we're so far to the right that the John Birch Society looks like a fifth-column communist organization. But I just wanted to share with you this book here, America to Pray or Not to Pray. And he puts out a catalog. I would recommend that you write to him and say, send me your catalog, would you? Send me your catalog. And I don't agree with everything that Mr. Barton says about everything, but boy, I agree with most of it. And this outfit is called Wall Builder Press. Wall Builder Press. Post Office Box 397, Aledo, A-L-E-D-O, Aledo, Texas, 76008. That's their zip code. They got a phone there. It says 817-441-6044. Again, that's 817-441-6044. And this guy's just got a ton of good things to say about America and about what our problem here in America is, and particularly on education. I mean, this guy really hits the nail right on the head with these educators and education. There's a little section in here. I thought it was on page 68, and he's talking about teacher competency testing. It's on page 66. I got about 5 minutes here, so listen to this. With the growing awareness of poor student performance, attention has begun to focus not only on the educational system in general, but on teachers in particular. Features such as the Dallas Times Herald Report, 1983, can be found in most major newspapers across the country. Now notice some of these highlights. 20 states have acted to stem the flow of teachers who cannot spell, cannot add, or cannot punctuate by requiring competency testing for teachers. Now listen, boys and girls, all of these teachers are college graduates, and then they go on to college and they get a teaching credential. Now they are certified teachers. Now listen to the statement again. Certified teachers with college degrees and teaching credentials. 20 states have now acted to stem the flow of teachers. That's these people who have college degrees and teaching credentials called teachers who cannot spell, cannot punctuate, and cannot add. So they're going to give them competency tests. Excuse me, how in the hell do you graduate from college if you can't add, can't spell, and can't punctuate? How do you get a degree from college? Why do they pass you? Oh, I see. As long as you pay your tuition, keep your nose clean, they'll give you a degree. You don't have to know anything. You don't have to add. You don't have to spell. You don't have to punctuate. You just have to pay your tuition and be there every day, and we'll give you a degree that says, I am smart. I have a degree from college. I am from the university. Oh, God help us. It gets worse. When the test was given last April to 1,269 juniors in Texas teacher education programs, 38% failed the exam. These tests are basic skills taught by the 12th grade, such as calculating percentages, capitalizing words, and comprehending a 200-word passage. Can you believe that? 38% of these teachers failed. Boys and girls, how in the hell can you expect a teacher to teach your kid something he doesn't know himself? How could a teacher in public school teach your child where Tehran, Iran is, or Riyadh, Saudi Arabia is, when he himself doesn't know? How can this teacher teach your child to read when the teacher is a functional illiterate? And how in the hell do these people get into the public school system? They don't let them in the Catholic school system. They don't let them into the Baptist school system. And I don't know of any homeschoolers that are that dumb. Boys and girls, if you want to homeschool your child, you buy one of these homeschooling programs and then get the hell out of the kid's way. Cost you $550 or $600. And your kid will learn and do better. He will be academically smarter than if he goes to public school by about 60%. If you want your kid to know 60% more than he's going to learn in public school, give him a homeschooling outfit. Put him on the homeschooling program. And get this, of the homeschoolers, hey listen, most homeschoolers are not teachers, don't have a teaching credential, and aren't even college graduates. Did you know that? Most homeschoolers in America don't have a college degree, they are not teachers, and they do not have a teaching credential. And their children score 60% higher than public school students where they have certified teachers with teaching credentials. Isn't that just special? And David Barton points that out here in his book called America to Pray or Not to Pray. You know, if we had a guy like David Barton as Secretary of Education, if we elected David Barton President of the United States and just said, hey, listen, take over and run this thing, you know what? I'll bet you in 3 years there would be such a metamorphosis in the public school system. Hell, half of you public school teachers out there would be unemployed. Do you know that? That's why we can't have people like Barton in as the Secretary of Education or President of the United States. It would threaten the careers of half the teachers in the country. He'd fire them. They're that incompetent. It gets worse. We'll pick this up here next time. It not only gets worse, the damn teachers cheat. Now, how can you expect your students, your children, to go to school and learn any morals when the teachers themselves are cheaters? This test was given to 3,300 new teachers in the Houston Independent School District, but because of cheating and other irregularities, oh my God, 3,300 teachers. They could only use 2,400 of them because there was about 25% of them cheating on the test. And that's your teachers. Not the students. That's the teachers cheating. Hey, I'm about out of time. We'll take it up right here next time on the Law Hour and Editorial Review when we come back talking about this thing of, gee, what if? All right, remember the Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, worldwide over the Internet. For more information about the law school and the Law Hour, please go to our website. That's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. And the law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school that is open to individuals by prearrangement. The law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc. If you'd like more information, go to our homeschooling page on the website at georgegordon.org. The Law Hour is carried worldwide on the Internet. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date. And the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Time's up. I've got to leave it right there. Hey, we'll see you back here tomorrow night. Same time, same station. God willing, of course. So until then, thanks for listening, and good night, friends.